Chapter 15. With ample time to plan his movements, he was not surprised when nothing went right. His arrival time was suitable, 11:20 p.m., Wednesday, May 10th. He had hoped to park illegally on the curb, just a few feet from the ground-level door to his apartment, but other drivers had the same idea. The curb had never been so completely blocked with a line of cars, and to his anxious satisfaction, every one of them had a citation under a windshield wiper. He could park in the street while he dashed back and forth, but that would invite trouble. The small lot behind his building had four spaces, one reserved for him, but they locked the gate at 11. So he was forced to use a dark and almost completely abandoned parking garage three blocks away. A large, cavernous multi-level that was sold out during the day and eerily empty at night. He had thought about this alternative off and on for many hours as he drove north and east and plotted the offensive, and it was the least attractive of all options. It was Plan D or E, somewhere way down the list of ways he wanted to transfer the money. He parked on level one, got out with his overnight bag, locked the car, and with great anxiety, left it there. He hurried away, eyes darting around, as if armed gangs were watching and waiting. His legs and back were stiff from the drive, but he had work to do. The apartment looked precisely the same as when he had left it, which was an odd relief. 34 messages awaited him, no doubt colleagues and friends calling with their sympathies. He would listen later. At the bottom of a tiny closet in the hall, under a blanket and a poncho and other things that had been tossed in as opposed to being placed or stored, he found a red Wimbledon tennis bag that he hadn't touched in at least 2 years. Other than luggage, which he thought would appear too suspicious, it was the largest bag he could think of. If he'd had a gun, he would have stuck it in his pocket. But crime was rare in Charlottesville, and he preferred to live without weapons. After the episode Sunday in Clanton, he was even more terrified of pistols and such. He had left the judge's guns hidden in a closet at Maple Run. With the bag slung over his shoulder, he locked his door on the street and tried his best to walk casually along the downtown mall. It was well lit, there was a cop or two always watching, and the pedestrians at this hour were the wayward kids with green hair and occasional wino, and a few stragglers working their way home. Charlottesville was a quiet town after midnight. A thundershower had passed through not long before his arrival. The streets were wet, and the wind was blowing. He passed a young couple walking hand in hand, but saw no one else on the way to the garage. He had given some thought to simply hauling the garbage bags themselves, just throwing them over his shoulder like Santa, one at a time, and walking hurriedly from wherever he was parked to his apartment. He could move the money in three trips and cut his exposure on the street. Two things stopped him. First, what if one ripped and $1 million hit the pavement? Every thug and wino in town would come out of the alleys, drawn like sharks to blood. Second, the sight of anyone hauling bags of what appeared to be trash into an apartment, as opposed to away from it, might be suspicious enough to attract the attention of the police. "What's in the bag, sir?" a cop might ask. "Nothing. Garbage. $1 million? No answer seemed correct. So the plan was to be patient, take all the time that was necessary, move the loot in small loads, and not worry about how many trips might be required, because the least important factor was Ray's fatigue. He could rest later. The terrifying part was the transferring of the money from one bag to another while crouching over his trunk and trying not to look guilty. Fortunately, the garage was deserted. He crammed money into the tennis bag until it would barely zip, then slammed the trunk down, looked around as if he'd just smothered someone, and left. Perhaps a third of a garbage bag, $300,000. Much more than enough to get him arrested or knifed. Nonchalance was what he desperately wanted, but there was nothing fluid about his steps and movements. Eyes straight ahead, though the eyes wanted to dart up and down, right and left, nothing could be missed. A frightening teenager with studs in his nose stumbled by, stoned out of his wasted mind. Ray walked even faster, not sure if he had the nerves for 8 or 9 more trips to the parking garage.